A/B testing and that testing cycle is your best friend. You don't have to go all in. You can do small amounts, make a testing budget that's 90% BAU, 10% testing, and then find a rollout plan that rolls what's getting hooked back into your main budget, things like that. Always be moving and adapting. I think that's the key thing. You can't even trust with a lot of these markets that what you knew a year ago even still works.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast. Here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. Huge thanks to Ala Kakani from Nosto for introducing us to this brilliant guest. Thank you, Ala. We really appreciate it. Now, in this episode, we are talking luxury fashion. We're talking marketplaces. We are talking super complex operations, customs and tariffs. We're talking AI, practical AI tips, and we are talking about expansion into the Middle East. There's a whole lot more we get into, but those are the key things. Make sure you listen to the end of the episode so you don't miss out on my guest's top tips and my own take on this episode. And now to introduce our special guest. Holly Daniels is the head of e-commerce at Cult Mia and a Draper's 30 Under 30 alumni. Cult Mia is an independent luxury fashion marketplace showcasing new designers and unique collections, many of which are exclusively to them on their Shopify website. Founded in 2019, they won Draper's Best Independent Retailer in both 2022 and 2023, and last year were named in the UK Fast Growth Index. Not surprising, since in the last couple of years, they've scaled sales five times. Hello, Holly.
Hi, how's it going?
It's good. Great to have you here. And, sparing some time whilst you're busy 5Xing growth. I mean, I'm amazed you have time to do podcasts.
There's always a couple free minutes.
But how did you get started in e-commerce yourself?
I've been working in e-commerce for a little over 10 years now. So back in 2013, I think it was, I started actually not intentionally. I was studying journalism at the time. I worked in a few fashion stores. They needed help in these e-commerce and online business spaces that were just opening up. And I just honestly found I was really good at it. So over the years, I scaled up into content positions, operation positions, quickly scaled into e-commerce management by 2015, I think it was, and I've sort of been sitting in those and above since then, really working with growth and startup models. That's my bread and butter. I love seeing the whole ecosystem, how things flow through from acquisition all the way to post-purchase. I think it gives you such a holistic view of the entire business and how to make really good decisions to come forward. But yeah, really blending like creative and analytical is my bread and butter.
As it is of so many of us in e-commerce, if you can't balance the creative and the analytical,
totally,
you're in trouble, big trouble. And I totally agree with you about being able to see the whole of that purchase journey, because for me, the number one way to improve retention is to recruit the right people in the first place.
100%.
Which, if you've got separate teams on those, it can be really tricky if you're not got that whole overview. So
yeah, I think like communication between e-commerce and marketing and brand partnerships, whatever it is fundamental, especially in a startup, because nothing works in a silo. You can't deliver this piece of content through social media or a paid ad and then not communicate with the e-commerce team about what that landing page is supposed to look like, right? You've just broken your entire metric in one move, right? So I think communication across all those work streams is super important.
Yeah, so, so true. But let's update everyone on who Cult Mia is if they're not familiar with the business. Where in the world are you and where do you sell to?
Yeah, sure. So Cult Mia is based in the UK. Our major markets are actually the US and the Middle East. We do ship to the UK and the EU as well, but those are our main ones. We actually have about 240 different designers currently on the website. They're all independent designers. Our team scours and sources the earth for different designers from Colombia, Vietnam, Turkey, Georgia, really working fashion councils there, independent designers, and kind of trying to figure out what is that next big designer and how can we get to them first. So our whole kind of concept we go for is you know, when you go to a wedding and you see someone wearing a beautiful dress and you go, where did you find that? And they always seem to find the brands before you do. Our whole ethos is that we find those brands and we deliver them to you. And we also created a scaling solution for those brands as well, which is our second part to it. So some of these brands are small enough that they don't have access to things like operational systems or shipping rates that we can get to ship globally. So we give them a way to raise their business in a global space.
And I saw on the site, a lot of the products are made to order.
Yeah.
I guess when you're working with those tiny designers, they can't afford to have one of every one of this dress ready to go in every size. So, but that must add a huge amount of complexity to customer services, to conversion rate, and to the ops side of it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the two prong there you have is one, it makes it easier for these smaller independent designers to say, this is low risk. We're not asking you to do a big wholesale order with a big platform that you may or may not sell. What if that order gets canceled? What if, you know, suddenly that big business goes under and they can't fulfill that wholesale order that you suddenly have 300 pieces for, right? So we take the risk off them as well. We say, when you get an order in, we'll bring it to you. But the other side of it as well is from sustainability angle, they're not overproducing anything. We're not stuck with dead stock, which is great for the environment, also great for us as a brand. We're not trying to hawk something that we have too many of as well. So it kind of works for all three. But you're right, from a conversion rate aspect, it does have more consideration. We're very lucky that the clientele that we've bought into the business seem less sensitive to it, which is great. And I think that comes from really good brand positioning and marketing, and also just finding the right customers. But some of these items can take anywhere from 7 days to 4 weeks. And so making sure you really have a really good post-purchase journey in there as well to make sure that there's not that time in between that says, we took your money, see you later. You know, it's making sure, like we all know that the biggest killer of customers is fear of time. Not communicating with them, making sure that they know this is in the atelier, this is getting its final stitches, this has just gone through Turkish customs and now it's coming to you and winging its way. That whole process is really, really important to us, but it does make up a considerable amount of our stock. I think it's about 42% of brands are all demand led. So they're either made to order or a pre-order space.
It just has so many benefits on every front apart from immediate customer satisfaction. But like you say, if you get that post-purchase journey right, then they're so much more excited to open the parcel and so much more into the product when it arrives than they would have been if it arrived next day.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, there's definitely some CRO in front of that as well, which is making sure that's super clear before purchase, making sure that we're getting the right measurements. Like if you're ordering this and it's going to take 4 weeks, you obviously don't want to get it, realize it's the wrong size and then have to send it back and wait another 4 weeks for another one, right? So there's a lot of pre-sale work that goes on there as well.
And we're skirting around the product, but let's get really clear on what the product is. It's women's fashion in certain categories.
Yeah. I mean, our number one category is always event wear. It's a really big moment for us. We have some beautiful designers, especially out of Vietnam, some really gorgeous gown designers like 216, IHF, Hachi Couture, Happy Clothing, beautiful brands. If you haven't heard of them, please feel free to come have a take a look at them. They're really, really stunning designs. And some brands from India as well. So Debe by Gabriella is also a really nice formal wear brand we have as well. Really good wedding guest as well, if anyone's looking to go to weddings. But that's our bread and butter. But we do also have a plethora of summer wear, event wear. We do beautiful accessories and shoes. In shoes, Fabulous is a beautiful ballet flat brand, which has been gorgeous. And bags, we have beautiful ones that come from Lebanon or a hand stitch, like Sarah's bag. It's also one of the greatest things I love about working at Cult Mir as well, is that all the brands that we find are also essentially need to fit into one of our values in some way. So we have four values for the site, which is cult local, cult eco, cult conscious, and cult power. And essentially means that in some way they are socially conscious, sustainable, they empower minorities, or they do some kind of heritage practice that they preserve within their industry. And so it's really interesting to see the stories about all these brands and how they weave this into their work. I mean, Sarah's bag is one of them where they only hire ex-female convicts to beat the bags to make sure they have a way to get back into the workforce as well, which I think is like a really cool initiative.
And it all kind of piles on top of each other in terms of how you get the customers bought in to become advocates and fans of Cult Mir, because there's the exclusivity, there's the no one else has got this, there's the sustainability, there's the I've got to wait for it to arrive, which can be super exciting when it's pivoted the right way. You must have a really, really passionate customer base alongside all of that.
Yeah, very passionate customer, very passionate team as well. I think that when you have teams who are passionate about the values that they're working towards as well, the output's always better. But you're right, the customers we have, the community within Cult Mir, they're very gung-ho about the designers they love as well. They can be very devoted to a designer they find once on there, and that becomes their favorite one. They come back and buy it again and again and again.
And your role as head of e-commerce, what does that encompass and not encompass? Where are your lines?
This is a very good question. I think like most e-commerce people, that's a blurry question sometimes as well. But technically speaking, so I run across our paid media, e-commerce and operations teams. So I essentially, like we talked about before, make sure that funnels all the way from how did you find us into is that sale nice and easy for you, to the post of did you receive it easily? Was the customer service good? Did you need to make a return? If so, was that nice and smooth for you as well?
Now, I talked in the intro about how the business has 5x'd in the last couple of years. You're on the fast growth list. That's complicated enough when you're selling product you're designing yourself to keep stuff in stock, to get the marketing in line, to fulfill everything and keep the ops running. When you're doing, it's kind of like it's a marketplace, it's also a drop ship, and you're discovering all these, there's quite a lot of merchandising and buying going on in the mix as well. And then it's globally sourced and globally distributed. I'm guessing there was some level of almost the most complex thing to enable that growth is what happens on the back end.
Totally. I mean, I talk about this a lot in my day-to-day. Previously, before working at Cult Mir, I've only worked in easy B2C models where we have the warehouse, there's a stock, I send it out here, it comes back. It's usually mostly domestic, or you're doing a little bit of international. That's pretty much it. We're doing mostly international, mostly third party. So it's usually parcels going from places like Vietnam to Saudi, or it's going from Turkey to the US, which has lots of layers of complexity to there. For anybody who's ever worked in that kind of operational side, there's lots of customs you've got to figure out. We've also had a very big year when it comes to customs and tariffs, especially for the US. I know more about tariffs now than I ever wanted to in my entire life. but you make it work, right? It's very complex as a solution. You have to think about who's going to be the MOR, so the merchant of record across all these different regions, who's responsible for the tax, and how does that customs paperwork come through? We're selling it as Cult Mir, but you're selling it as the designer from that country and need it for tax purposes. So should those commercial invoices even say Cult Mir, or should they say Hatchi Couture, right? It's a highly complex scenario, and that as we've grown, we've had to be proactive and reactive, because we've reached challenges that I didn't even know you could encounter. It wasn't even my bread and butter to work in this like very cross-border operational sense, and wasn't anybody's in our team. So we were really lucky to have consultant help from time to time. We have a great consultant working with us right now, actually, Keith Dupree, who is amazing. And really looking at those places and really learning from others who have worked in these big marketplaces spaces is your best source of knowledge. We were talking to people who'd worked at Farfetch and how they worked across all these third-party border situations. And anyone else who'd worked in those sort of situations had been really helpful for us. But as you scale there as well, and you're scaling as a sustainable business, you have to make sure there's operation and like sustainable in efficiency, but also generally sustainable as well. So we've had programs and people come in to evaluate all our carbon, for example. And we became Positive Luxury Certified, which is the mark of a luxury business for sustainability. And through that, we had to check every single one of our designers down to what threads did they use and where did they get those threads and how were they dyed and are they sustainable in any way? So you kind of have so many complex layers to it, but you have to think about how it goes across border too. So is there a way that you can consolidate shipments so that it's not making two flights? Is there a way that you can make sure that the packaging is small enough and sustainable enough to make sure that that's nice and efficient too as well. A lot of complex layers that I think I could go on for forever. And it's been a lot of problem solving over the years, but I'm very glad to say it's in a, fingers crossed, great place right now. But it's yeah, you're right. It's a very complicated business models in some ways and a very easy one in others.
But it's when it comes to the, I think the physical logistics is relatively straightforward for the layman to get their head around, you know. But it's when you come into the tax and the legals and the customs, all of that bit then is the point that they, there's a few points in e-commerce where, in my opinion, you're a muppet if you don't immediately reach for the expert. You know, there's a lot of places where you can stumble through yourselves, but that has to be a place where you've just got to go, I need someone who understands the language because the wording's weird enough. And then who can point out like how many of us would stumble through that without realizing that the legal entity that you put on the paperwork is going to have massive ramifications.
100%. And I don't think enough people ask for help. I think that is such like ask subject matter experts. It's the biggest thing I've told people in teams that I've built over the years, which range from like 5 people to 20. And I working horizontal to other departments is so many people I've seen over the years try to act like, well, and I want to do it this way. I'm like, then why did you hire that person? You hired them to know more than you. If you knew the same as them, you wouldn't have hired them. So let them lead. And I want to hear from them too, because this isn't my area of expertise. I'm happy to say I would like to hear their opinion and get some help on that. And I don't think enough people do that, especially across fashion industries.
Yeah, it can be so limiting if you're not going, you know, if you're trying to work it out yourself, because you'll make mistakes and it will take longer. And when you've got parcels going all over the place, all over the world, you know, you can't every day you're making more errors if you're not fixing that quickly.
You want to move quickly. Yeah. You don't want to let that fall into the backlog, which is why we're very lucky to have had some consultant helps across the year who in these big subject matter experts that I previously had no knowledge of at all.
And you mentioned that you're really big as a company in both the Middle East, even in the US. Was that always the plan in the business, or was it we found a hot spring of customers and we're going to go and chase it?
Exactly right. Yeah. So originally, when I started in 2022, the major markets were the UK and the US. US was always doing really well. There was a nice burgeoning market for it there. UK was a little bit slower, but still a pretty good market at the time. And then from that, I mean, one of the biggest things that I think everyone can take from is data is king. find the data and really take a close look at it. Because what we found out of seeing these some of these UK addresses, though, is that a lot of the billing addresses were actually based in the Middle East somewhere. And we realized, okay, that's interesting. They clearly have some sort of crossover from here. We engaged with a lot of subject matter experts in certain regions, found out they do a lot of their traveling across border, especially through summer into the to EU and the UK. So actually, these customers we thought we had from UK were mostly from the Middle East. But it came with its ups and downs as well. We first tried paid marketing from that to pull them in, and nothing sticked, and we couldn't really figure out why. So pulled it back, tried to regroup, and then just realized we were, again, completely in the wrong season for them, because like we just found out, they're not in the Middle East through summer. They're traveling. Why were we sending paid ads there when they're not around yet? And maybe they would have shopped in summer if they had more brand trust with us, right? But they hadn't been introduced to us at all, and we're hitting them when they're not even there. So we pulled it back up in winter, and suddenly, like, same ads, same audience groups, everything like that, changed the creative to more of a winter stuff, and it just took off. We realized what they really loved was all that evening wear, all the gowns. They have so many formal events they wear in that region as well. And then we sort of took it up from there. But yeah, it's, I think, listening to the data. And I also think not being afraid to stop and regroup is also important as well.
Yeah, I think so. I'm really kind of surprised and in awe of the fact you worked out it was the wrong time of year, because I ran, as the audience probably already know this, but I ran an ads agency for 10 years. And I don't think we ever turned around to a client and said, it's the wrong time of year. We've worked out now, it's the wrong time of year for this. Let's pause until winter, until summer, and we'll try again. So it takes some serious sanity and cleverness to go, hold on a minute, it's the wrong time of year, let's pause and we'll retry, rather than thinking the creative's wrong, the targeting's wrong, the platform's wrong. And you could have so easily missed that opportunity without looking at the data, talking to the experts and really getting to grips with it all.
Yeah, and I think that we had the safety net of already knowing that the US is doing well. It wasn't like by pulling back on this region, we're losing a whole gap of sales we already had. We didn't have them yet. So we had the time to settle back and think, okay, what have we done wrong? What's right? And yeah, like I said, talking to subject matter experts in the region, that was one of the first things we learned, which is so interesting now because now, years and years later, we market to them all year round and we have the same impact, but we needed to get them to trust us with a really easy in for them, which is, I'm already at home, I need a gown. Our whole thing is that we make very specialty gowns that no one else had, which was had a high affinity with them. And then from there, for the next summer, we're like, great, you know our gowns are good. Do you need dresses for your summer traveling? We have some extra stuff that we can bring you back in for the retention sense.
It makes so much sense that you know, to get the launch needed to be at the perfect time of year when they're on the ground in the Middle East with all the events going on, with the time to see the ads again and again and again on the platform. They're not suddenly somewhere else where they're not going to see the ad. So it makes so much sense. Any other advice you give anyone? Because I know, you know, certainly here in the UK, there's lots of talk about expansion into the Middle East. So any other tips you can give to save anyone from making an error or to help them accelerate that you're willing to share, of course?
Yeah. No, I think honestly, market research is your best friend. Don't go in with assumptions about anything. I think that's one of the things that killed us originally and that we pulled out, is that we had all these assumptions like, oh, they might like this, or I think they like this, or even that we should be sending stuff that was super, super conservative to them because we're like, well, that's what I think we did. Market research, talk to subject matter experts in the region, talk to general people if you have any network across there who might shop at similar sites to what you're marketing, right? And we learned from that some really key moments. And then it's just A/B testing, and that testing cycle is your best friend. You don't have to go all in. You can do small amounts, make a testing budget that's, you know, 90% BAU, 10% testing, and then find a rollout plan that rolls what's getting hooked back into your main budget, things like that. Always be moving and adapting. I think that's the key thing. You can't even trust with a lot of these markets that what you knew a year ago even still works. They're always developing. They're always changing. Like anything, like the UK, like the US, anything else, you just make sure that you're setting your foundations well and then constantly pressure testing what you know.
Oh, great advice for any market, quite frankly. Love that. Thank you, Holly. Now, you admitted to me before we hit record that you are quite deep in the world of AI and how AI can be used effectively and usefully within the business. So how are you approaching bringing AI into Cultmere?
Totally. I mean, I think my biggest thing, like we were talking about before, is that you shouldn't just use AI for AI's sake. And I think that a lot of the conversations have been had around creative work. And I think that for us, we try to keep most of the creative work in-house where possible. But I think there's some key things around admin. And it can be the most innocuous stuff for us, which could be reviewing shipping and tax bills and making sure that we've been billed at all the right markers that were supposed to come through. And if not, going ahead and submitting disputes. That's an innocuous part of the role that no one wants to spend 5 hours doing, right? And like we're talking about, it's that effort to impact rate ratio. So is this AI actually saving you time in the long term? And could I be doing better things with my time? And that scenario, 100%. But I also know that that's really important. I could be getting big shipping refunds. I could be getting taxed wrong on a different HS code, right? Then you have really simple stuff across, like we have such a big back catalog of products. It's about, I think, 9,000 live at the moment. That's hard as a customer coming in. We obviously create curated sections of this is your holiday shop, this is your wedding shop, whatnot. But as a customer, like how do I find that dress I need to quite quickly? AI has helped us with surfacing and discovery so much through that, which has been really, really helpful. There's a lot across the board, to be honest. I mean, name a section. It's something that in some way I'm trying to check to see if AI can help us. But again, I think the key thing we came back to, right, is we're not just saying we should use AI. I think that's where a lot of companies fail. I think it's about being pragmatic about, would taking this off my plate or would doing it in this way either create more sales or save me more time? So it's that effort to impact.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. Holly, are you ready for the top tips?
Perfect.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
I would say Inspired by Marty Kagan. Kagan? It's actually a product management book, but I think it has a lot of crossover to especially e-com departments as well. I think he does some really interesting chapters about focusing on your staff as missionary versus mercenary as well. So essentially having them just tick the box and do the task or be actually invested in what they're doing and wanting to propel things further.
Ooh, that's a tough one to get right.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Okay, great book rec as well by our product manager there. Sorry, Mia Oddie. So big shout out to her. She's the one who got me into that book.
Excellent. Okay, traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
I mean, traffic and marketing, I'm all about testing cycles, testing, A-B testing, pressure test everything. Nothing should ever stay the same. You should be constantly cycling out.
So true, especially in these ever competitive times.
Yeah.
You cannot set and forget. Just not
no,
possible.
I wouldn't trust the stuff I know in 2022, but now I think the world is a completely different place every few months.
Yes. The tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
I mean, we could say Claude AI. I'm a big Claude Cowork person. It's connected to my everything. But I love Fixer. Fixer's also an AI meeting recorder, email organizer. It's been very helpful for me for agenda tips and things like that. So I have most of the team on that as well.
Nice. Two to check out. Well, I expect everyone's already had a look at Claude, but maybe not so much Fixer. The carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
Ooh, I think one of the best things for us is, well, not so much a tip, but what we figured out is what works now and what works at scale. So shipping and packaging was a really big thing for us. And when it comes down to the packaging, it can think about how big that is and how much packaging. Does it need 5 layers of things that go inside that? Or can I have one really big, sturdy mailer bag that actually protects that properly? And I think about thinking about the waste there was really big for us.
Yeah, sometimes it's not about changing from one type of thing to another. It's about going, actually, do we need
minimizing
tissue
the
paper?
Amount? Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Tissue paper and a plastic bag and a box and a this and the other. Yeah.
Yeah. And 5 tags that are attached to the dress and another strap over here. Just minimizing anything that can't go straight on your body.
Excellent advice. As it's been throughout, Holly, thank you so much. Before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media?
Yeah, sure. You can find us at cultmia.com or at cultmia.
Simple as that, everyone. Holly, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been great chatting with you and learning about what you've been up to. And I wish you all the best for the rest of 2026.
Thank you so much, you too.
Lots of great tips and advice there from Holly. I think for me, it was kind of the big takeaway for me is the clarity of her approach to things. You know, it's like, let's look at the data. Let's find the thing which actually needs improving, whether it's in logistics, whether it's in expansion into the Middle East, whether it's in packaging or AI, you know, whatever bit it is that needs improving, let's find the right way to do that, including finding the right person on the team, finding the right sourced expert, finding the right piece of AI or automation. So I think it's a serious clarity going on there. Sorry, all the shh going on there. Serious clarity, and you can see why she's the sort of person you want on your team if you are looking to 5X in a couple of years. So what else can you get from us? Well, you can get your hands on our notes about this episode, on the full transcript, those top tips and links by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can also use our direct episode short links. That's ecmp.info/the number of this episode. When you get to the website, please do add yourself to the Chloe Thomas newsletter list so you don't miss out on any of the cool things we share with you by email. And if you like this episode, then I've got a recommendation for you. Have a listen to episode 262. So we're going back in time a little bit here, but it's a super good episode where I'm chatting with another fashion success story, Needle and Thread. We're chatting to Mark Liddington from that team all about how Needle and Thread do it. And you can find all our fashion episodes via ecmp.info/fashion. Thank you for so much for tuning in to this and every episode that you do of the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I bring you a new one every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners just like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including encouraging businesses and consumers to make more sustainable buying decisions. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.